Auhea o ko e ko ka aha, inahe kuliana ibua o kea aha ho o kolo kolo ki e ki e hano hano o ka moko aina o Hawaii. E naoi mai, e malio mai, i lohi ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all persons having any business before this Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard.
Please call the case.
Case number SCAP 2157, Honolulu Civil Beat versus Department of the Attorney General. Arguing for the appellant, Robert Black. Arguing for the respondent, Stella Cam. Argument on the merits.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. This proceeding is being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel. During the proceeding, should a justice have a question, they'll raise their hand virtually, and I'll call upon them at the earliest opportunity. And I want to thank Judge Paul Wong for joining the court this morning as a substitute justice. I'll ask the attorneys at this time to introduce themselves in the order in which they will be arguing.
Good morning, Chief Justice, members of the court. Brian Black on behalf of Appellant Civil Beat, Honolulu Civil Beat.
Thank you.
Good morning. Deputy Attorney General Stella Cam on behalf of the Department of the Attorney General.
Thank you, Ms. Cam. Just to confirm, we have 30 minutes set aside for each of you. Mr. Black will give you a warning with 5 minutes left in your argument, so you'll have 5 minutes left for rebuttal, Ms. Cam. I will give you a warning with 5 minutes to go during your 30-minute period of time as well. And at the end of the 30 minutes for each of you, you'll see a light and hear a bell signifying that the time is up. Mr. Black, please proceed with your argument.
Good morning again, Chief Justice, members of the court. May it please the court. The Office of the Auditor serves a critical function in state government. It monitors how executive branch agencies use the public fisc, as well as agencies' management and effectiveness in performing public duties. As the Department of the Attorney General stated in its answering brief, the Office of the Auditor is, quote, a check against the powers of the executive branch. Public confidence in government relies heavily on trust and watchdogs like the Office of the Auditor. So when the Department of the Attorney General conducts a law enforcement investigation into the Office of the Auditor, that is a matter of substantial public concern. From the outset of this case, Civil Beat has sought the release of the Attorney General's report in redacted form, recognizing that discrete portions justifiably might be withheld. If there are questions, I'm prepared to discuss why the Circuit Court erred in holding that the 555-page report can be withheld in its entirety under the frustration and privacy exceptions. But the briefing addresses why that decision does not comply with this court's prior opinion in this case on the same record. Instead, my remarks will focus on the process and standards for redactions. First, I'll discuss how to identify the information that should be redacted from a document to address privacy concerns. And second, I'll focus on standard for when a document is so redacted that it cannot be disclosed. In the end, it's inconceivable that a year-long, massive fact investigation into a guardian of taxpayer monies is entirely off limits to the public and cannot be redacted. As to privacy redactions, this court has recognized in several contexts that redaction solves many privacy concerns. Redaction balances, on the one hand, concerns that may justify a measure of confidentiality, with the legislature's recognition, on the other hand, of a, quote, compelling state interest in open and accessible government.
Mr. Black, can I ask, I think, a prefatory question? To the extent that this report, and realizing you haven't seen the report because it's in camera, focuses on specific allegations or concerns about specific individuals, could it be viewed as a personnel record? And if so, what would the proper analysis be?
Well, that is something that the Circuit Court said, is that it is a personnel record. But and individuals do have a significant privacy interest in personnel records, but this was a law enforcement investigation. Personnel files are employee files. So I think the proper analysis would be as a question of whether there's a privacy interest in a law enforcement investigation, because the Department of the Attorney General doesn't have supervisory or personnel authority over the Office of the Auditor.
The I thought it was termed an administrative investigation.
Yes, administrative investigation, but that, as this court discussed, the in its prior opinion, investigations by the Department of the Attorney General are investigations into violations of law. So that's not a personnel evaluation. That's not a question of when you have supervisory employee authority over a group. If the legislature had some concern about its supervisory authority, then I think the appropriate thing would have been, as this court recognized in a footnote in a prior opinion, an investigatory committee, which is what we see going on right now.
So the only option, in other words, if and again, the record is very lean, especially from what you've seen, but if there are allegations raised about the leadership in the auditor's office, and the only means available to investigate those allegations from the point of view of the legislature is to convene an investigating committee. They cannot ask for another investigating authority or someone to conduct a investigation of the factual circumstances and report back to them so they can decide how to appropriately proceed?
No, I don't think that's the only option that they had available to them. And certainly, I want to make clear that there are privacy interests related to law enforcement investigations. It's not as though law enforcement investigations are released in their entirety when there's a request. So, for example, if there were the police department, there was a request for a police report, that there are redactions that occur in that context. But at the same time, there are redactions that occur. It is not a complete withholding.
Very well. We have a couple questions, beginning with Justice Wilson. Justice Wilson.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I am, of course, interested in what specifically is the exception that you would identify as applying to personnel records in this case. In other words, there are, as you said, there's a basic policy that has been expressed quite strongly, I think, in the Uniform Information Practices Act 92F for disclosure. And the policy is strong enough that the legislature felt that it should specifically identify exceptions. And in 92F14, provide some examples. And these are examples, but I was just curious about whether one of these exceptions is the one that specifically applies with respect to an employee evaluation or a personnel file. Can you help me with that, Mr. Black? Is there something in 92F14 that would apply? Because it seems it's fairly specific, it has to do with employees that are being suspended or discharged. And I wanted to see what your opinion is. What are we focusing on here, 92F14, as an exception to this very important policy that you've identified?
I think what I can say is that the circuit court focused on the exception for personnel files, and the personnel files 92F14B4 is a significant privacy interest recognized in personnel files generally. As I said, I don't think that this is a personnel file, because a personnel file is something that is an employee file, not something that would be generated by the Department of the Attorney General.
Well, section 4 seems to be fairly specific, right? not only does it say personnel file, it talks about applications, nominations, recommendations, proposals for public employment or appointment to a government position. Therefore, looking for how this particular 500-page report into the way that this, as you say, a significant and powerful government entity, the auditor's office, is conducting itself. I'm not sure how even the aspects of the personnel file that have been described by the circuit court fall into four. So that's your understanding. It's four. It's section B4 of 92F14.
Yes, I think the circuit court also, there's a separate section with regard to personal evaluations and recommendations. I don't remember the subset of 14 for that, but there is a separate section that deals with that. Again, I don't think that is really accurate description of what the Department of the Attorney General was doing. It was not a personal evaluation. It was an investigation into violations of law, as they, at least as they describe it in their motion for summary judgment.
Well, I will be asking Ms. Cam if she could help me with that, because it appears as though the district court may have crafted, circuit court may have crafted a new exception in line with 92F14. But that's not your view. You think that there was a specific provision of 92F14 that was relied upon?
The circuit court did cite to those two subsections.
Very well. Justice McKenna, your question.
Thank you. Mr. Black, I want to make sure I understand. It is your understanding also, however, isn't it not, that under HRS 28, 2.5, the Attorney General could conduct an investigation alleged violations of civil law?
Yes, the investigations can be criminal, administrative, or civil, yes.
Right. And would the Attorney General not be able to conduct investigations if the Attorney General determines to be in the public interest to conduct an investigation of other state agencies or even other branches of government, if asked even by the judiciary?
Yeah, no, I certainly think that they could do any sort of investigation into other agencies.
Or personnel again, matters within those agencies or other branches of government.
Into violations of law, into other government agencies.
Violations of law could include alleged violations of, let's say, other laws or discrimination laws or whistleblowing laws or anything of that nature, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Justice Edens.
Mr. Black, you've characterized the report as being related to a law enforcement investigation. On the first appeal, there was discussion about this being an administrative investigation, and that's something that Justice McKenna just touched upon. The circuit court, when it was discussing the 92F13 frustration analysis, only focused on the provisioning of legal services. So why are you injecting law enforcement investigation into this analysis?
Well, this court already rejected the idea that legal services were being provided, and I can only go, requesters are always at a disadvantage in these types of cases. We're sort of shadow boxing and can only respond to the things that have been released. So to the extent that anything has been released describing this investigation, this court has already rejected the idea of legal services being provided in this case. And so the department described this as a law enforcement investigation in its motion for summary judgment. So that's why we understand that.
Mr. Black, in that motion for summary judgment, they were using that. They only use a couple sentences and talk about legislative history there on the law enforcement exemption. But that was in the broader context of them basically relitigating the provisioning of legal services. So I took that in the MSJ as simply a throwaway on alleged history, and that wasn't related to their broader point on the provisioning of legal services. Moreover, the circuit court didn't even touch that. The circuit court basically circled back around to suggesting the frustration exemption was legal services. So I am somewhat puzzled by the injection of this being a law enforcement investigation. Can you clarify what you mean there? Is it just based on the MSJ?
It's based on the MSJ and this court's description of, in the prior opinion, of the investigation as perhaps falling within the Attorney General's authority to investigate violations of law. And I would note that the in the summary judgment, there was only one summary judgment. There was the original summary judgment before the first appeal. And the department separated out its law enforcement argument from its attorney-client privilege argument based on legal services.
Let me ask you this. Let's talk about what the circuit court actually ruled. Now, the circuit court actually ruled when it was talking about 92 F14 B8 and B4 that those basically there were significant privacy interests that outweighed the public. Tell me why you think that the report is not a personal evaluation such that individuals have a significant privacy interest under B8.
So the again, being at a disadvantage and not knowing what's in the report and not having an opportunity to be able to address specifically even categories of information. So the best that I can say, there seems to be some concern that the circuit court raised with respect to, for example, employees describing the operations of the office and the performance of the auditor and this managerial staff. But in context of that specific type of concern, when there was a concern raised about privacy of personnel, of personal evaluation, OIP in opinion 95-24 addressed the idea of management studies and employees evaluating the managerial staff in a management study and explained that there are significant public interests in understanding the working conditions within a department and also in a public interest in understanding how management is perceived by employees. So if there is, and in that case, the OIP just assumed that a management study would fall within the idea of a personal evaluation without holding what exactly it meant by what the legislature meant by personal evaluation. But assuming that this did fall within the idea of a personal evaluation, there are significant public interests. And I mean, that's just one example of a significant public interest. There are many others in that would apply in this case that would require redaction, not withholding in its entirety.
Do you think that a 555-page report pursuant to an administrative investigation is something that would typically be considered a personal evaluation if the administrative investigation is focused on the office of the public auditor? Is that a personal evaluation?
Oh, certainly not. Does not make sense in the context of what we basically understand to be the focus of this report, at least to the extent it's been described.
Mr. Black, if the report, if this were an agency that had its own human resources and EEO offices, there were allegations raised about supervisory employees, an investigation was launched by one or both of those offices, The outcome of that investigation was something short of suspension or discharge. Would that, the report of that inquiry, the folks who were interviewed, the assessment of the folks who did the investigation, you know, the all of what went into that, would that typically be something that in your view would be required to be produced under UIPA? And if not, why not? And if so, why?
Yes, I think it would be something that should be disclosed, at least in redacted form. You know, when you're talking about privacy, you can identify a significant privacy interest more so in that type of an instance more readily. But at the same time, there's going to be substantial public interest at a minimum in understanding how the investigation was undertaken and how that office operates. The issue is really redaction and how you, if necessary, protect the identity of the individuals involved. At the same time, there may be individuals that their identity should be disclosed because they're high-ranking officials with substantial discretionary authority. So the analysis it needs to take place in a way where you're balancing all of the various information as it applies to various individuals. It's all on a spectrum.
In this case, you know, and the record, of course, is very sparse. But you know, if the Attorney General was being asked to, in effect, perform that kind of function, analyzing allegations that have been made about certain managerial employees, doing the investigation, talking to witnesses, collecting documents, do you think that in this instance, it should be treated in the same manner as if that were done internally by, you know, an HR department or an EEO office, or is there something different because the Attorney General's office conducted it here? Because apparently, and again, the record is very sparse, there is no obvious division within the auditor's office, at least that I've been able to identify, that would be able to conduct this kind of investigation. And maybe I'm wrong, and if I am, please correct me.
I'm not aware, and there's certainly nothing in the record, but I think the court should be careful about treating the Department of the Attorney General as some sort of personnel department that can oversee employee issues. I mean, there is, for the rest of the executive branch, there is the Department of Human Resources Development, which could do investigations. But I do understand that there's a difference here where you've got the legislative branch. So if the court were to treat it as something that were more akin to a personnel type of investigation, I think that the analysis still would require some level of disclosure in a redacted form.
Very well, thank you. Justice Wilson, your question. Justice Wilson, you're mute. You're still on mute. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Mr. Black, I would be interested in your thoughts in the relationship between 28.2.5, which is the provision that authorizes the Attorney General to investigate, and investigate when determines that an investigation would be in the public interest, and the 92F13 exceptions, that is exceptions to the Information Practices Act that apply when there is a flavor of some personnel issues. So in this case, I think the record would establish, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the Attorney General decided this was in the public interest, and certainly the 500-page report would confirm that this investigation was done in the public interest, an investigation that has been characterized, in our opinion, as an administrative investigation. But it's an investigation in which there were people interviewed and they were asked questions that could relate to work performance by other people in the office. So is it your understanding that the decision of the circuit court is that when an investigation involves questions about personnel action, personnel conduct, which clearly it did in this case, whether or not people at the office were doing their job properly, that it then is accepted from the law that's requiring the publication, the making public of investigations that are done that are in the public interest? Is it your sense that the circuit court decided that once an investigation, albeit in the public interest, and an administrative investigation is being done, if it covers some issues that deal with the conduct of the people in the office being investigated, that it is then accepted from disclosure by the Uniform Information Practices Act of the state of Hawaii?
Well, I don't know that the circuit court did exactly that. He does say that that he balanced the public interest, and I think first off, I just going back to 28-2.5, I think that's if that's the authority that the Attorney General used, that's an investigation into violations of law. And again, I understand that could be personnel related.
Let me interrupt you for a sec. I'm sorry to interrupt you. It says the Attorney General, when conducting a civil, administrative, or criminal investigation. So, civil law, administrative law, criminal law. I mean, this is a straightforward proposition that it is an investigation into the law. But in this case, more specifically, it doesn't yet seem that there's a record suggesting it's a criminal investigation. And it does seem that the record has established at this point that it's an administrative investigation. So we have an administrative investigation being done, but apparently is in the public interest. Correct me if I'm wrong, if the record doesn't support that, but a conclusion that nonetheless, there seems to be some discussion of personnel matters involved in the investigation that would accept the entire investigation from disclosure.
And I don't think that's not appropriate, right? Like, just because something is, as I mentioned in response to Chief Justice Rechtenwald's question, just because something is personnel related does not mean that it is exempt from disclosure. There needs to be further analysis, including the public interest. And the circuit court did act as though it was weighing the public interest, but I think that there are substantial public interests involved here that clearly don't seem to be considered. And there should have been, even if this were a personnel type of evaluation, it should have been disclosed in a redacted form.
Justice McKenna, followed by Justice Edens.
Thank you. I'm actually, I think, following up on Justice Wilson's line of questioning. And if this was a, please explain to me why 92F-14A4 information in an agency's personnel file, why that exception would not apply in this case.
Again, I think that personnel is something that is employee related. So our position would be that the Department of the Attorney General does not have employee authority over the Office of the Auditor sufficient to say that this is a personnel file as opposed to some sort of law.
All right, let's just assume that the Office of Attorney General does conduct personnel administrative investigations of other state agencies, for other state agencies, for its own client, state agencies, or even other branches of government. If so, why would this not be information in the legislature's, a part of the legislature's personnel file?
Well, as this, I think that goes back to what this court already found in connection with the prior opinion, saying that this is not an internal investigation that was done on behalf of the legislature. in terms of rejecting the idea that there was an attorney-client privilege.
Okay, so you believe our prior case holds that this was not a personnel investigation also?
The court's finding was that this was not one of the findings in the course of that holding that there's no attorney-client privilege was that this was not an internal investigation that was done on behalf of the legislature.
All right. Thank you.
Justice Siddons.
Mr. Black, going to redactions, it doesn't seem like there's even a slight public interest, really an absence of a scintilla of public interest, in my view, covering the names of the rank and file employees who participated in the administrative investigation. Do you concede that the names of everyone mentioned in the report, absent the three targets referenced in the circuit court's order, may be redacted?
If you look at the OIP opinions, people who are solely identified as witnesses often, in terms of an investigation, often have a privacy interest, and there also may be frustration interests related to releasing their identities. So,
I think what I'm talking about is is there any public interest? Is there even any slight public interest in those names?
So, again, shadow boxing. So, the best I can say is that if you can look at opinions like OIP, opinion 07-08, if there were someone who was participating in the investigation, although they were not a target, and they testified to things that were substantively showed that information impacted public duties in some way, impacted their public duties or impacted them in some way, and potentially even a low-level analyst could be someone whose identity is disclosed. But I don't know enough to be able to say one way or the other.
Do you agree with the opinion letter 98.5 that basically states that there is little or no public interest in the disclosure of the identities of witnesses and complainants?
Yes, I think that's generally correct. As I said, I think that is generally correct. Well, I see that my time has expired. I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Yeah, and I'll give you some time for rebuttal, Mr. Black. We were peppering you with questions here at the end, so we'll have some time for rebuttal after we hear from Ms. Kam. Ms. Kam, your argument.
Thank you. I think the argument that was presented highlights the unique features of this particular report. That it consisted primarily of interviews of all of the employees in the auditor's office, which is a relatively smaller office, as well as former employees back in 2016. And those statements given by the interviewees were candid impressions, recollections, perceptions, opinions, and sometimes critical of others in the office, supervisory as well as non-supervisory. Some of them asked for confidentiality before they gave their statements. And we found that it was impossible to segregate out the information that would reveal their identity because of what they were talking about, which primarily was observations of the workplace and who they were working with. So even deleting the names and the job titles would not be sufficient to mask their identity. And so when we were thinking about segregation, we looked at the test for segregation, which is whether information is individually identifiable and whether the information would result in a likelihood of actual identification. And we did look at the OIP opinion letters, and there were several that talked about witness or interviewee identities. And they found that identifying information is not just from the standpoint of the public, but it's also from the standpoint of persons familiar with the circumstances. And the OIP opinion letters that discussed this also cited to the US Supreme Court opinion, Department of the Air Force versus Rose, in making this determination. Because the information that we felt was confidential was interwoven within the non-confidential information, we were not able to figure out a way to disclose.
And Ms. Cam, what is the basis, the primary basis that the government relies on for that information being confidential? Is it that it was a personnel record? Is it that you would be, there'd be a frustration of a government purpose? And if so, how?
We withheld on two grounds. One was the UIPA's privacy exception, personal privacy. And for that, we were looking at 92F14A4 or B4 and 14-8. And that's personnel type information, evaluation type information. We didn't feel that a report needed to be in someone's personnel file in order to receive this type of protection. And again, it's a balancing test. So we were recognizing that in this particular report, there were significant privacy interests in this information. It was not only about the acting auditor and about her supervisory employees. It was also opinions about everyone else in the office. And so in balancing, we felt that the information that was provided did not impact the auditor's functions to perform audits. It's different from the OIP opinion about the auditor's office. I believe that was 07-08. That in that situation, you know, the auditor employee actually had a major conflict of interest, which affected the audit report that was supposed to have been provided. I mean, they had to, I believe they had to segregate out entire portions of that employee's work. So to us, this was a different situation.
Ms. Cam, Justice Wilson has a question.
Thank you. Ms. Cam, I wanted to get some clarification, if you could help me with this concept of the manner in which a personnel investigation becomes an exception to the general policy of disclosure of matters of public interest that are contained in the Uniform Information Practices Act. So in this case, I now understand that you're, and that's helpful, you're relying upon, and that you believe the Circuit Court relied upon Section 4 of 92F14. We're talking about a personnel file. So in the event that the investigation being done by the agency, in this case, the Attorney General's office, or you could say investigation being done by the auditor's office, includes interviewing people who then speak negatively about the way other members of the office are conducting their affairs. At that point, in your view, it becomes a personnel matter that no longer is subject to disclosure. That is the entire investigation. And if that's the case, doesn't this exception completely follow the rule? For example, in a case like this, where you have, I think by all accounts, we'd all agree, a very, very important government agency with the power to investigate. You have a legislator that's concerned that the power is not being used properly. An investigation is done that concludes that It's a factual conclusion, not a legal conclusion, as the opinion has pointed out. But nonetheless, wherever the auditor's doing an investigation or the attorney general's doing an investigation, if the interviews include reference to the way people are doing their job and whether they're doing it properly, then it's no longer subject to public disclosure. Help me with that. Is that your view?
No. If there is a suspension or a discharge resulting from the investigation, then under the balancing test, under the statute, 92F14, there is no longer a significant privacy interest by those individuals in that information. So if that were the case, then we would have analyzed it in a different manner as to those particular employees or employee who, if they had been.
I'm sorry, my scenario probably wasn't that clear. I wasn't assuming that somebody ends up being terminated. I'm assuming in this case, there's just a discussion about the way people are doing their job, but it's negative discussion about it. Because in this case, there wasn't any suspension or discharge, right? So, yeah. So it seems to me that we're talking about a very, very expansive interpretation of Section 4 of 92F14 that swallows up those investigations where you have, as part of the investigation, a description of the way people are doing their job within an office, even an office as powerful as this, the auditor's office.
I think we would still try to see if we could segregate out information because, you know, it's always, it could be possible to mask the identities depending on the contents of the report. So I would not say that just because there was a significant privacy interest that we would, or there were significant privacy interests of the individuals named in the report, that we would withhold everything in the report under the personal privacy exception of the UIPA.
But the negative inferences about certain individuals, I'm not sure which individuals that your office is most concerned about in terms of their privacy interests, but let's just say it's all the individuals. You're saying that their privacy interest outweighs the public's interest in a report about whether the conduct of the auditors is being done in compliance with the law. That's quite an elevation of a privacy interest in the sense that it seems to cover a heck of a lot of investigations, right? Most investigations that are done by the auditor's office or the attorney general usually involves interviews.
They do involve interviews, but oftentimes there's factual information, like witnesses are speaking about factual events that they've seen, they've heard.
I understand what you mean, but I suppose you could interpret our opinion where it says the contents of the report itself are factual, implying that it was not intended to serve as legal advice, but rather as a summary of facts, would be a characterization of this as essentially a factual report. You have to go, I guess, to people to get some of those facts and facts as to the way investigations are being conducted. But so far, at least the opinion that pertains to this case isn't characterizing this as a personnel investigation, but an administrative investigation as to how the office was conducting itself.
I think perhaps it began as a factual type investigation and it somewhat changed in characterization as the interviews were conducted and it became more of an opinion, candid opinions about everybody else's performance and behavior and speech in the office. So you know, based upon this personnel type information and evaluation type information, we did find a significant privacy interest for all of the interviewees identified in the report.
Thank you, Ms. Kam. Judge Wong, followed by Justice Edens and Justice McKenna.
Ms. Kam, good morning, and thank you for your arguments this morning. I have a question regarding that privacy interest that you were talking about in Section 92F. As lawyers, we all know that privacy or privacy interest is contextual. And my question is, these individuals that we're concerned about, their privacy interests are public employees in a public position. Does not that kind of employment, does not that kind of position reduce privacy interests when it comes to a report like this or an investigation like this?
Again, I think the types of statements that were given by the interviewees were not factual. They're opinions. Those to us created a different characteristic in this report, which would weigh more in favor of confidentiality. And part of the reason for that is intertwined with the frustration exception, which is that if the AG's office does not protect witnesses' identities when they're providing their candid opinions, we would have a more difficult time obtaining information. Information that people might not necessarily give if they thought that the contents of their statements, which would identify them, would be made public later on.
Thank you.
Justice Edens.
Thank you. Ms. Kam, you talked about the personal evaluation, a significant privacy interest right under 92F14B8. And as Mr. Black has indicated several times, you know, he's somewhat handicapped. He doesn't know what was in the report. You obviously do. And we also know that this was an investigation launched in response to complaints about some employees there. And you know that it was generated and really conceptualized as an administrative investigation of the office of the auditor. That's the first sentence in the 555-page report. And the themes and the subject matter that you've been touching upon, such as by saying that there's opinions in there, there's not factual, the themes, the subject matter of this 555-page report appear much broader than what one would typically associate with a personal evaluation. So really, aren't we talking about a very different context here than that in which personal evaluations are typically conducted? And doesn't the framing of this administrative investigation or evaluation of the office of the auditor suggest that it's not a personal evaluation?
I think the intent when the investigation was first started was to investigate the office of the auditor. However, what they ended up with were statements about the interviewees' opinions about how the office was run, as well as their opinion, personal opinions about the other employees in the office, supervisory as well as non-supervisory.
Personal evaluations typically in the workplace undertaken by employees who were simply rank and file employees. In other words, are the rank and file employees evaluating their superiors typically in workplace evaluations?
In formal workplace evaluations, yes. This ended up becoming more like a free-for-all where the employees felt free to say, to talk about anything that bothered them in the office.
Let me shift gear to the before personnel file a significant privacy interest. You're arguing that the report is information in a personnel file. And I'm just wondering how that's possible. I mean, one, whose personnel file is it in? Is the state AG keeping this with their HR records? I mean, doesn't there have to be some sort of an employer-employee relationship for something to be a personnel record in a personnel file?
Okay, maybe I misspoke earlier, but our position is not that it was a personnel record in a personnel file. It's more that it's a personnel type of record, which the OIP in prior opinions has recognized that personnel type information would also be a significant privacy interest under 14b4.
I'm sorry.
As for the AG's investigation of personnel in the auditor's office, I believe that the investigation was conducted pursuant to 28-2.5. And at that time, the AG's office believed that it was doing so based upon the direction of the legislature, which it believed was in an attorney-client relationship at that time. But now, I think the Attorney General is allowed to conduct investigations. And if there is no other method by which a situation in an office can be investigated, then I think it is under the public interest. And so I believe that it has become apparent that the Attorney General's investigation in this situation, and it was recognized by the prior decision, that it was probably based upon the public interest aspect.
I have one final question, and it relates to your comments about the confidentiality and the mental impressions of some of the employees. I'm just wondering, why does it matter that an investigator promised confidentiality to those interviewed? In other words, I mean, does a person who makes a promise of secrecy have the power to override the UIPA and to dodge its disclosure requirements?
No. I'm not sure whether there were promises given. I know that certain of the interviewees asked for confidentiality. And I think by asking and I guess being assured of, I don't know whether there were actual promises made, but they felt more free to say whatever they thought without limiting their comments and their criticisms. And so they did so without worry about it becoming public, especially to their coworkers.
Very well. Justice McKenna.
Thank you. Ms. Kam, I'm assuming that this report was provided to the legislature.
Yes, it was.
Is the legislature not the employer of the legislative auditor?
I know that they appoint the auditor, but I think the removal is by something like a two-thirds vote.
And the legislature has the power to appoint and remove the auditor, correct?
Correct.
All right. I I'm just wondering, in terms of, and I'm not an employment law expert, so I'm wondering, I know that sometimes on the private in the private sector, outside consultants are asked to conduct personnel evaluations. And it's my understanding that sometimes those can still be confidential. I'm just wondering, does the state ever retain outside consultants to conduct personnel evaluations?
I'm not able to answer that question. I don't know. I think they could.
All right. Thank you.
Ms. Kim, what is your suggestion if a report contains a mixture of, what you've characterized as personal opinion, about how somebody does their work, their demeanor in the workplace, whether they're a good coworker or not, but then also comments that could reflect on the overall effectiveness of the office. What's the appropriate test for what should the approach of this court be? I gather your position is that you simply can't segregate out those things, but are there any other approaches you could suggest other than all or nothing?
I think in this particular situation, and again, my arguments are directed only by the particular features of this report. If there were sections that were not opinion and that were purely factual, and that we didn't have to worry would identify anybody, we would try to disclose that information. But the information given and the context and the way that the interviewers were speaking about their recollection of events would have identified others as well as themselves. And so for that reason, although we did try to look at it closely, it was all interwoven. And I don't feel that this particular investigative report is segregable to mask the identities of the interviewees.
Very well. Justice Wilson.
Thank you, CJ. Ms. Kim, of course, this is the second time this opinion, second time this case has been before us, and it raises real issues about how the Attorney General perceives its obligation to provide information to the public. So let me try to understand, do you think that there's a point at which the Attorney General should weigh the public interest in disclosure against the fact that certain witnesses might be identified who would feel uncomfortable when an administrative investigation is taking place? And if so, was there some weighing done in this case? Because, a report that describes self-dealing, workplace bullying, incompetence, maybe it describes something even more serious than that. Is there a point at which the public interest might suggest that the Attorney General would stand up for the public's interest in disclosure as opposed to interpreting the information as being a personnel matter and deciding that there is a clearly unwarranted invasion of privacy? What was the weighing, if any, that went into this?
The weighing was the significant privacy interest of the interviewees. And
I used that.
Right. And we balanced that against the public interest in disclosure of, I guess we're looking at what this report would have revealed about the auditor's office other than just a bunch of unhappy people.
Okay, so tell me about that.
Okay.
Is there something that would suggest that the information that was brought forward by these individuals, albeit because they were saying negative things about each other, did not have worth to the public? Or was there some even scintilla of public interest in this 500-page report? Was there something that might serve the public interest?
There is a scintilla of public interest. It shows, I guess, how perhaps the office had unhappy and dysfunctional situations in the office. But it did not reveal anything that would have showed that the auditor's office was not performing its functions. They were able to perform its functions. They just had general unhappiness in the office. And in those types of situations, the balancing test will tip in favor of the significant privacy interests of the individual. If we had found that it definitely affected the performance and the type of the caliber of the audits, then I think we would have looked more towards the public interest in this situation.
Ms. Cam, you mentioned earlier, and I think this is a reference to 92F14, B4, the fact that there were no disciplinary actions taken of suspension or discharge because there's an exception relating to personnel records that for an action that results in suspension or discharge. What's your analysis of how that factor weighs in this case? Could you explain what your point of view as to why it matters in this case? The record doesn't indicate there was a suspension or discharge undertaken. How does that factor into your analysis?
If there was a suspension or discharge of any of the employees, then that particular employee would lose their significant privacy interest in the record or in portions of the record that reflected upon their conduct, which served as a basis for that suspension or discharge.
And I know you've talked about being concerned about the people who gave the statements. Well, what if the folks who gave the statements, their statements led to that person being suspended? What happens then to those statements? Are they produced or not?
We would produce it if we were able to mask their identity. But we were not able to do so.
Very well. Justice Edens.
Yeah, Ms. Cam, let's say some material on the report is not subject to disclosure, but we don't necessarily agree with the circuit court that the entire report can be withheld. So if we were to allow some redactions, how long do you think it would take you or somebody working on it to propose a list for the circuit court? How long do you think that would take?
A list such as page by page determination of what we would argue we would withhold. Is that your question?
Well, based on whatever our opinion says, on a almost a word by word or sentence by sentence basis, I'm just wondering, however the opinion shakes out, if there is an order requiring redactions, how long it would take. And yes, to the word and sentence level.
Okay. I did think about that as I was looking through the report, and I think it based upon 555 pages, if I were to do, let's say, 2 pages a minute, you know, I'm thinking it would take me hours and probably a couple days.
Thank you, Ms. Kim.
All right. Ms. Kim, anything else to wrap up today, or for anything else do you want to bring to the attention of the court?
Nothing further. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Kim. Mr. Black, your rebuttal.
So I'd like to just step through what this court teaches, this court's prior opinions teach about privacy redactions in general. And I think the idea is that you start by looking at the person at issue and the information at issue. And the privacy balancing test first applies as to looking at particular information that is potentially being released and seeing whether that information, the public interest, outweighs if that information is tied to the individual's identity. But even if there's not a overriding public interest in that information tied to identity, there has to be a secondary analysis as to looking at the privacy balancing in the context of once that individual's identity is redacted. So what is the public interest in that information with the identity redacted? And so, for example, in Schopel versus City and County of Honolulu, this court released witness statements in the context of administrative investigations with the identities redacted. And that was so that because of the public interest in monitoring how government supervises its employees and handles allegations of misconduct. Now, of course, there could be information, and this court said in Schopel versus City and County of Honolulu, where there is no public interest. So in that case, there was an instance in which personal medical information that had no substantive relevance to the issues involved, that information can and should be redacted, even if the individual's identity is also redacted. That then leads to the question of, okay, so what do you redact? And obviously there are going to be things that are commonly understood to be personally identifying information, name, of course, and then there will be other things that are commonly understood. So social security numbers and home contact information is unique personal identifying information. But then there are things that are less obvious redactions. And here's that information, if it inevitably would lead to the actual identification of an individual, should also be redacted. But that can't be based on just speculation. The agency, which has the burden of proof under the UIPA, must present evidence that explains why particular descriptive information would uniquely identify an individual.
Well, Mr. Black, Justice McKenna has a question.
Mr. Black, thank you. It just occurred to me, do you know whether this court has ever addressed the people that are actually being investigated or the employees, whether they should have a say in terms of whether information in which they might have a significant personal interest should be disclosed?
So as this court held in Schopel versus City and County of Honolulu recently, the agency are the ones who have the discretion, and the individuals involved do not have a right of action to enforce the statutory privacy interests. There is the constitutional right of privacy, but there hasn't been any indication in the record in this case that there's information that would trigger that constitutional right that would provide for the individuals to be brought in this case.
Thank you.
Mr. Black, you know, and I just asked this question to Ms. Kim, if to the extent one looks at what this report is and concludes that it is, you know, sort of classic personnel evaluation, you know, conflict in the workplace, this person's not a good supervisor for the following reasons, yet that didn't result in suspension or discharge, what's your analysis under the statute? And I'm just asking you to put aside for the moment the question of whether these allegations affect the overall effectiveness of the office. I'll get to that one in a second, that second part. But just if it's classic sort of, you know, workplace conflict, not a good supervisor for the following reasons, those matters are investigated, but they don't result in suspension or discharge. What's the analysis?
I think the analysis is the balancing test. That's Pure News One, and then it's a question of again, what is the public interest in the identity of that person being disclosed in the context of that information? First off, and then second, if there's no public interest in that person's identity being disclosed in the context of being a bad employee or something like that, then the question is, well, what is the, is there a public interest in that information without the individual's identity? And there is a public interest in having that information revealed, particularly as it concerns the Office of the Auditor, when you have just in terms of one, what kind of investigation was done into that type of allegation or discussion? So what did the Attorney General do? And then to the extent that it, performing public duties, as I said in response to Justice Eden's question, there is an OIP opinion about management studies and the working conditions within an office, even if it's not to the extent of affecting public duties. And further, just other public interests that are involved here, the interest in how taxpayer monies are spent, and just the Office of the Auditor as a critical watchdog organization.
So, coming back to the question I asked her about, things that actually directly relate to the effectiveness of the office and others that are more, talking about management style or interactions between specific employees, is there a way, should those two things be separated? Should there be an effort made to provide some and not others? Say we concluded that there's some of those types of allegations that are more, day-to-day management conflict in the office that are there isn't a substantial public interest in. How would we go about figuring out what to order produced and what not? Is that something you can provide some thoughts on?
Well, I think the legislature set the bar at the presumption is disclosure. So there has to be a significant privacy interest in the information, and in particular, looking at it, if you can redact the identity, and for the most part, you can redact the identity, there is going to be a public interest, just a general overall public interest in seeing what kind of information is being investigated. And that's just stronger in the context of when it is affecting public duties, but even in the context of when it's, the person's a bad employee or not. If it's without the identity, and the identity can be redacted according to very clear and objective standards, and putting the burden of proof on the agency to come forward with how that redaction would happen, then there's no reason to withhold information about, oh, they're a bad employee. And there's just stronger reason to disclose information when it's about public duties.
And what last quick follow-up, and then Justice Wilson has a question. What's your reaction to Ms. Kam's argument, hey, small office, even if we redact the names, the other employees are going to know who said that?
Well, I think there's a couple problems with that. One is that it's not compatible with the idea of withholding things based on the standard of there are people on the inside who that would know what this information is. That's not compatible with what the legislature said. It should be disclosure as open as possible. And how's a circuit court supposed to know what the insiders know? That's not a standard that is easy to apply. And you're talking about people who already know what happened. So disclosing to them is not something that's going to be, it's not new information. So applying something like that is not really a workable standard like redaction should be. It's not a workable judicial standard. And to the extent that the Attorney General's office is making this argument, and they failed to produce information in response to the summary judgment motion, and failed to produce additional information and evidence on remand, really this record doesn't have information that would justify withholding just based on the idea that it's a small office.
Very well, thank you. Justice Wilson.
Thank you. Mr. Black, I am interested in your response to the weighing that did apparently take place in this case. In other words, perhaps this started off as a potentially meaningful exercise to do an administrative investigation into the way that the auditor's office conducted its investigations, but it digressed into a gossip session. And the worth of the information in the gossip session was of such little import that there was no overriding public interest any longer because the nature of the gossip was unconvincing. So why wouldn't the conclusion in this case be, as I think the AGs concluded, there's no need for additional evidence on remand at summary judgment. There's no need for additional facts to address the weighing because the report itself is a testament to the point that the public doesn't really have any interest in what was discussed because after all the interviews and the 500 pages, it's just a unworthy gossip session that shouldn't be revealed to the public.
I see my time's expired if I can respond to the question.
No, absolutely, Mr. Black, please.
I think that's that misses the point under the UIPA. I mean, the UIPA is intended to, again, the default is disclosure. And this is a point at which the Attorney General's office spent a year looking into this issue. The taxpayers have a significant public interest in knowing, at a minimum, what kind of investigation was done. And, you know, especially as the circuit court at least described it, when this turned into a question of issues with respect to the auditor and the managerial staff, there's a significant interest in knowing what the allegations were. And for example, even if the auditor and the managerial staff were exonerated in some way, and that those allegations were said to be unfounded, That's still of significant public interest because of the discretionary authority that these individuals have. Even with a gripe fest, it's important for the public to know, regardless of whether or not it affected public duties, it's important for the public to know that it didn't affect public duties and that these concerns with respect to working conditions and concerns about the management staff are being addressed by the Attorney General and others.
Very well. Mr. Black, anything further for the court at this time?
Just in conclusion, the Department of the Attorney General, as I said, expended substantial resources here on a year-long investigation into the Office of the Auditor. Was that a waste of taxpayer monies on a wild goose chase? Was there any concern with respect to the proper operation of this critical watchdog organization? A redacted version of this report would help the public to not only understand how the Office of the Auditor functions, but also how the department conducts investigations into other government agencies. So we respectfully request that the court reverse the decision below and remand for disclosure of a redacted report.
Very well. Thank you to both of our attorneys for your arguments here today. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Ua, ua ho'oku ia mai ne kea aha ho'okolokolo ki'e hanahano o kamaku aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned.